Welcome to Geek Culture Online. I'm your host, Patrick Bolin, and we've had several false starts, so I was very careful with things now. Okay, a little bit of housekeeping before we start our special series. We're going to be doing multiple podcasts. They're all going to be released within a day or two of each other. Our release date is going to be changed to Saturday. We're also going to be activating our Patreon page this weekend, so look for the link on that. Now on to the podcast. So this is going to be a special episode that is going to be going through all 20 Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. We're going to go over them in order of release, not in chronological order. Now, because of the Avengers Endgame being moved up to April 26, this is going to be a little tight. Near the end, we're going to be releasing two in 1 week to make up for the moved up timeline. Now, giving a little bit of history, now in the 80s and 90s, Marvel Comics surprisingly wasn't doing too well. So to keep the lights on, they sold the character rights to most of their major characters. I'm talking about they cleaned the house to keep the lights on. Now, if everybody remembers in the 70s and 80s, Marvel did dabble on TV and movies. There was the Incredible Hulk TV show. They did do a Doctor Strange pilot.
Yes.
That was wonderful. Mm-hmm. They also dabbled in with some Incredible Hulk movies and doing a backdoor introduction of Daredevil and Thor at the time.
There was also the Spider-Man series.
Yes, the Spider-Man
series. The live-action Spider-Man.
Yes,
the 30-year-old playing a teenager.
Well, happens a lot on TV.
Right. And then
they did a couple of Captain America made for TV movies.
Yes, they did.
I never saw those.
And now I am here with my two favorite guests, Larry and Ethan.
Hello.
And so now keep that in mind that all that was done in the 70s and 80s. Marvel sold the rights to those, so they didn't really have a lot of control over it. That's why Captain Marvel was the grandson of Captain Marvel, and he rode a motorcycle.
And Captain America.
Captain America.
Yeah. Right.
Captain
right,
America.
Right, right, right.
And he had a plastic shield that was actually the...
Actually, I do remember. I
and
do
the
remember.
I was as his wind shield on his
motorcycle.
I do remember
and it
seeing
in the wind.
Seeing what I remember seeing that now. Now,
he
now.
He had a motorcycle helmet that was with the blue with the
yes.
Aeons.
Yes. Yes, I
and
do remember
that.
Was
his that. Mask. Yeah. So his motorcycle helmet was his mask.
And so it's kind of like a combination. They're taking liberties. Let's say that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
but I would say definitely. Spider-Man was a good series, so was Hulk.
The Hulk was fantastic. I love the Hulk.
Doctor Strange pilot was awesome.
It only aired twice.
I remember watching it.
And I saw it the first time, and I just went completely insane. I thought, I want more of this, and never saw it again.
When was Doctor Strange on?
It's 1978.
Yeah.
I do believe that either the trailer or part of it is out on YouTube.
So who was Doctor Strange?
It was some guy I don't remember.
I can picture him, though.
Yeah, yeah, he had a perm, and he had a mustache.
Well, that was
late
70s. Yes,
it's his 1978 film, Doctor Strange. I'm looking, at interwebs, people.
Yes,
IMDb.
Yes,
which is the comic book psychiatrist Peter Hooton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Peter Hooton. Yeah, Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica Walter played Morgan Le Fay. John Mills played Lindmer. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anne Marie Martin played Clea. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Now going into the late 90s, now Marvel was in a lot of major financial trouble. So they started just peeling off all their characters and selling them to anybody that wanted them to the highest price. Then, because of that, they started doing a major turnaround in the aughts. So then they went, well, okay, now we're back on our feet. They all opened up a West division, and Stan Lee moved out there. It was kind of like their movie and TV division, and he kind of says, I'll run this for you because it's in California. And so they started going like, okay, what do we got left? What do we still own? They really didn't have a lot left because, Spider-Man was with Sony.
Right.
The Hulk went to Universal.
Right.
Fox took over almost everything tied to the X-Men and
Fantastic Four,
and the Fantastic Four universe. They sold their shirt with that one, because instead of just selling the major characters of Fantastic Four, they gave them the major, the minor, and anything even touching the comic books.
So any characters that were introduced in those series were included with
them. Right, and that's...
Silver Surfer, Galactus, the Skrulls, Jessica... Alicia, Ben Grimm's girlfriend, Crystal from the Inhumans, just... The whole kit and caboodle went with it.
Yeah.
And so Marvel said, okay, what do we got left to work with?
Right. What's
left?
What's scraps, but yeah, they weren't scraps. Now they're not. We know they're not scraps.
And
then also it made sense for Marvel to try that at the time, because you think about it, right before then, you know, the first couple of X-Men films had been out and had been pretty successful at the box office. So were the first couple of the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies had done very well. So it made sense for Marvel to try to get their piece of the pie, so to speak.
Yes. You know, since they couldn't control the storylines or what happened, except their name was on the characters, you know, the X-Men and Spider-Man, they went, okay, well, the focus is coming back on us now. Our sales of the comic books are starting to spike, especially with the X-Men. When the X-Men hit the screen, everybody's mind was blown, because that hadn't been done in the genre before. It was dark, but it was like the comic books.
Right, and when was the first Wolverine movie with Jackman? When was that? I'm trying to think.
The first X-Men was 2000.
Yeah.
Right, okay, and then Wolverine is kind of part of the X-Men universe.
Yes, but that didn't happen until after the third X-Men.
So that was probably like 2006 or something like that. So right around the time that Marvel was launching Marvel Studios.
It was called Marvel Studios at the time, because we'll be talking about that with our first film. So they went, what's left? And they begged and borrowed and basically sold their soul to all these investors to get their first movie off the ground. Now here's the trouble. It's just that it was going to be a make it or break it. Either the film makes money and they get on their feet, or they're going to lose their shirts again, and they're going to be back to square one before, at the verge of bankruptcy.
Right. Well, I mean, think about it, like the 2000s, early 2000s. Little sidebar. I mean, that was kind of Star Wars time again. You know, Episode One was 1999. Mm-hmm. You know, Attack of the Clones was 2002. Those were riding high.
Yeah, and Battlestar Galactica, the TV.
Although, remember, 2002. The first Spider-Man came out and actually outperformed Attack of the Clones.
Yes.
Did it really? Okay. I don't remember that. Oh, but.
No, was it the first Spider-Man movie that had the largest hits for a trailer?
I'm not sure.
Well, we'll talk about that too, because we have an update on that from the Avengers podcast that we did. So they decided to go with a director that wasn't really known for action films. They got a star that was had a kind of a bad past, and they pulled all these things together. I'm thinking, and I may be wrong about this, but I'm trying to read between the lines, is that if it failed, they could blame it on either of those two.
Okay, I mean,
possibly, or it could just be that they weren't a quote-unquote major studio. They were really working independently.
They were.
Right.
On their own, so.
Right. Yeah, this was all Marvel money. They weren't owned by anybody at the time.
They weren't owned by Disney. They're independent.
So Stanley went out there and built this from ground on up.
Well, I mean, I get your point, Patrick. I think, though, what I would view it is, look, we're trying to market our remaining assets, right, our remaining intellectual property. And so, again, I've discussed this with both of you in the past, that, you know, I remember, like, the Iron Man cartoon, you know,
from the 80s. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Right, in the 60s.
Okay. Well, I thought there was a 60s. Anyway, I was watching in the 80s, and I remember, I mean, I kind of watched it, but it wasn't, like, a big focus of mine. So I remember thinking, like, oh, Iron Man's coming out in the movies, really? Like, that cartoon thing? And I dismissed it. I said, okay, it sounds interesting, but I don't know if I'll see it at the theater. That was, like, my attitude, because, again, I'm a Batman guy. I mean, I'm, you know, Batman's number one, Superman. Well, you know, Iron Man was, like, a tertiary, you know.
He really is, and, I mean, that's a good point, Larry, because, I mean, Iron Man was not Marvel's biggest property. I mean, it would be Spider-Man, X-Men, Fantastic Four.
Right.
You know, would have all been higher profile than Iron Man. So Iron Man was really like a C-list superhero.
Oh, it was. Because
or like even Thor. Like, I mean, I remember even watching like Thor.
Thor would have been a bigger profile.
Exactly.
Or Captain America would have been a bigger profile than Iron Man. So it's really kind of a, in a way, kind of a gutsy move by Marvel to lead off with Iron Man.
Right.
But at the same time, I think when you mention the actor, I think a lot of the success is owed to
Robert Downey Jr.
Now, if you haven't guessed, we're talking about Iron Man,
right? Yes, from 2008, the 2008, right? Yes. Which I did see at the theater. I did go to the theater. With a friend of mine that Ethan knows. I mean, not anybody here, but what I'm still trying to get the point is that I think because it was like a tertiary, not a primary.
Well,
type
he
superhero,
was introduced in a comic book that wasn't labeled the Invincible Iron Man,
right? So with that, and this is my logic. So I'm in Los Angeles. I'm in Marvel Studios. Okay, so we don't have really a, kind of like a big famous superhero. We need somebody with kind of a known name. Yes, now Robert Downey Jr. had his issues, but I mean, when I heard Robert Downey, I said, oh, I know exactly where I mean. I know him from. He has a long movie career, of course.
Less Than Zero was one of my favorites.
I mean, his reputation at that point had been that he was a fantastic actor, but was difficult to work with.
Correct.
He'd
had
personal issues with substance abuse.
Well, yeah, he just got through, after doing several films prior to Iron Man, of becoming insurable. Because one point, because of his troubled past, he was to the point where he was uninsurable, so therefore he couldn't do any films and stuff. Right. So he turned that around. He got...
Right. That's my logic. So if I'm Marvel, I'm saying, well, this is a tertiary character, so let's go with somebody kind of famous, not exactly. And like you said, since he had a sullied reputation at that time, not anymore.
Right.
They said, "Well, he'll give us he'll give us a little extra boost, quote unquote."
Yeah.
Well, little do we know
he wants it.
He wants it because this maybe will quote unquote turn around his career, or he'll become a bankable star. Little do we know that he's like the highest paid actor, one of the highest paid actors now of all time because of his. All his movie roles. So
yeah, he redefined Tony Stark.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. I mean, when I think of Tony Stark, I mean, I think of Robert Downey Jr. I mean, whether I should or shouldn't, Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark. There is no more other.
And I think that's true not just for people like us, but for just the general public as well. If you say Tony Stark,
it's Robert Downey Jr.
And I've even seen, like, a couple years ago there was video that popped up on YouTube of Robert Downey Jr. singing with Sting, and people were like, "Oh, look at Iron Man!" And
they're
calling him Iron Man, calling him Tony Stark, because that's
instinctually it's instinct.
In the comic books, they even started to make him look more like Robert Downey Jr. because in the comic books he had the old '70s mustache, and that was it. And then now he's got a goatee,
He looks much more modern, which is fine. I mean, I get that, but I think, right now. I mean, you think of, Hemsworth as Thor. You think of these iconic characters. But yeah, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. He was in U.S. Marshals. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was in many excellent movies I love. But he is Tony Stark. For the vast majority of the globe, that's what he is. And there's nothing wrong with that.
The same way that like Harrison Ford is Han Solo,
Indiana Jones. Exactly.
They've typecast themselves for playing their role a little too well.
Well, right, okay, right, but I mean,
I think it's more true of Downey than the others. I mean, I think
he owned it.
He's more synonymous with that character, even more so than Hemsworth or
I think another reason is that because that character had never been on the screen before,
right?
So therefore, he was able to make it his own. Because Superman had been done before. Christopher Reeve, George Reeves in the 50s, and then there's that other guy from the 40s serial, and I can't remember his name.
And who's the guy, who's the guy that did it in 2006? Brendan Rausch? I love that movie. I saw it at the theater. I loved it.
I thought that was the most, that was very good. But everybody expected a performance like Christopher Reeves or George Reeves, because that's what they expected the character to be like. Kind of like James Bond. Everybody expects him to have a little swagger. So right. If somebody comes in and does something different, they're going to go like, hold on.
Right. That's not James Bond, but it is James Bond. It's their version of James Bond.
Yeah, their interpretation of it. So having a blank slate.
Right. And again, and you're a storied actor. Robert Downey Jr. just doesn't get... I mean, he's in comedy movies. He was in Back to School, which is a Rodney Dangerfield movie. He had a really good role in that.
What was it? Saturday Night Live for a while.
Right, exactly. So
Air America?
Exactly. I love that film. Right, so again, he's played, comedic roles.
Sherlock Holmes.
Right, Sherlock Holmes. Well, that was after Iron Man, though. Right.
But he's inhabited those characters and made them their own. They said, okay, this is the character. This is the parameters you have to play with. What can he do with that?
Right.
And he just takes that and fills it as best he can with the character. I mean, that character has depth.
Right. And so to any of the listeners out there, I mean, obviously we're talking about Iron Man here, and that's one of our primary subjects. But, I highly recommend, and I'll just use my example of Star Wars, the original Star Wars from 77. I was like, who's this Alec Guinness guy? And they keep talking about he has this historic man. And so I literally, over the years, I went to, Passage to India. Kwai. Exactly. I started watching old Alec Guinness films. So my recommendation to all the listeners here is, yes, watch Iron Man and watch the Marvel Universe movies. But, go see Less Than Zero if you haven't seen it. It's a fantastic movie. It's a period piece of the late 80s, but it's a fantastic view of rich society in America in the late 1980s.
Right.
Or U.S. Marshals or you said Chaplin. I mean, these are all fantastic. I mean,
What was that one with the shoes? Anyway. We're getting what we should do is talk about the film
absolutely,
now.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Now
this is 2008. Question. Boom.
Yes.
This is beginning. This is spring of 2008. Nobody's expecting a film like this.
To me, it was almost like a sleeper film. I mean, really. I mean, not that it was empty. Like, I didn't see it on opening weekend, but I saw it within a couple weeks. And I mean, the theater was full, but there was like a buzz. I mean, I think it got a decent review from the papers.
Yeah, it did.
But I mean, it
had
wasn't.
Groundswell.
But again, this is again, people are hard. People maybe that are were growing up with these films. In 2008, the second Star Wars trilogy was done. There really were no Star Trek movies in the theaters. So a superhero movie about Iron Man is like.
It wasn't commonly known unless you were a comic book fan.
Right.
See, because everybody that were civilians that know Spider-Man, Batman, and Superman and Wonder Woman. It's just that those are commonalities.
Right.
Unless you're in the comic book field, it's just that the common folk are not going to know that.
Correct.
Now, this being the first one, it was distributed by Paramount.
Paramount, yes, yeah. Yes.
And I was reminded of that when I watched the movie this week. This movie starts and I see a Paramount logo. I'm like, Paramount, that's right. They distributed this film.
Right, but again, so that's always the funny thing.
And the opening has the flipping of the pages and the cartoon thing, the old logo of Marvel.
Right. But just like when you see Indiana Jones movies or Raiders of the Lost Ark, those are distributed by Paramount as well.
Yes.
And I will admit to this. Even when I see a preview today, and again, this is me with my love of Star Wars, I'm just used to the 20th Century Fox fanfare.
Yes.
I mean, to me, it's almost like something's missing from the new Star Wars.
Now, here's a question. Now that 20th Century is under the umbrella, are they going to bring that back?
I'll start tweeting them. For Star Wars beginning, the next Star Wars, you have to put it in the beginning. And you should put it – I mean, why not?
It's missing. But anyway,
right.
So okay,
it's Paramount.
Just quick note. Yeah. So originally, Marvel had a 6-picture distribution deal with Paramount. This was before the acquisition of Marvel by Disney.
Right.
Okay. So that would have included, all the way up through basically the first phase of the Marvel films, as well as Iron Man 3.
I wonder what changed, because you just think how if things stayed at Paramount.
Six pictures is a lot. Pictures is a lot, actually.
It is. Yeah. Now,
that's two trilogies, in essence, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so.
Yeah, and the cost of a superhero film. So Paramount went, full
they,
into
they,
this.
They kind of put their neck out.
They saw something that nobody else did.
But ultimately, they had the distribution deal, but ultimately, the financing was all on Marvel. So if this film had not been a hit at the box office,
Marvel would have been done.
And what I read is not only would Marvel Studios have took a hit, that might have actually bankrupted Marvel.
It would have done.
They would have basically killed them off.
Yeah, because they put all their eggs in one basket, expecting this to work.
So a big gamble.
Right.
It's but obviously paid off.
I remember seeing the movie. And I, you know, I'm like, okay, all right. And I have low expectations, but I was like, oh, okay, this isn't Batman. I said, okay, it's Iron Man. But I said, but again, what got me going was Robert Downey Jr. I just kept thinking, it's Robert Downey Jr. He's gonna do this well.
And it's kind of shown a little bit differently, and because they throw you right in the middle of the film, it opens up, and you're right in the middle of it.
Right.
Then the attack happens. Then they kind of rewind the clock 36 hours.
Yes. Right.
And that's they haven't really done that.
No. I think I like that. I like that because it wasn't, you know, I don't know, it just felt different. It just felt like that's very Tarantino-esque. I mean, when I see like a time shift, I think of Quentin Tarantino movies, which I love. So I think of that. I know it's not every other people have done it, but for me that's Quentin Tarantino.
Like Swordfish. You know, it the opening scene is the last scene of the movie.
Correct.
Sorry, spoilers. But this
it's a 19-year-old film. I think we can do that, so it's okay.
Yeah. So this one, boom, throws you right into it. I think that they grab you. They hook you. Pull you in.
I literally remember I was sitting with Jonathan. And I saw it with Jonathan in the theater, and I'm literally, you know, I have the bucket of popcorn, I'm literally like shoveling it in. I mean, this is like, oh my God, this is fantastic. I just remember that.
And what's interesting too is basically the beginning of the film kind of tells the origin story of Iron Man,
right?
Which is more or less faithful to the comics. Mm-hmm. One big difference is, I remember Iron Man was introduced in the 1960s.
Yes,
the 1960s. So he was in Vietnam.
Yes.
He was captured in Vietnam.
Right. Yeah. So obviously this is a modern film.
It's 2008.
Right.
Think about it, 2008 is the last year of the Bush administration.
Correct. Yeah.
So it takes place in Afghanistan instead, which makes sense to fit the current time.
Which would be a modern theater of war.
They updated it very well, and it didn't feel dated.
Right, but it still kept the essence of the story of what happens.
Right, because Stark Industries is a defense contractor.
Well, and also that he gets shrapnel in him in
the same way.
The whole idea behind the suit is to create something to keep the shrapnel out of his heart.
Yeah,
that's why he has the
arc reactor.
Now,
right after he gets caught, they name drop something, the Ten Rings, which ties back to the Mandarin.
In Iron Man 3.
In the comic books.
Okay.
So it's just that right off the bat, they're starting to build something. I caught that and I stopped it and rewound it because I didn't catch it the first time. Whoa, the Ten Rings.
Well, I mean, that's something that I as I watch more and more movies, that there's, even early on, they're dropping stuff. I mean, they've been plotting stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
They're playing the long game.
There's 10 steps ahead, basically, right?
Yeah,
which is beautiful once you start seeing it, because like, okay, so there's more to the story.
I mean, it's like what I assume we'll get to later is, but like when you look at the end credit scene, they're already setting up, you know,
the next
few movies. So.
Right.
Yeah, probably because of the deal they did with Paramount. They're going like, okay, we're going to do this. If we get to it or not, that's going to be determined.
We have five more. We got to distribute, so we got to create something. But little did they know.
Yes. Now the next thing with Jensen, they changed his the guy that was captured with him. They changed that a little bit, but he kind of does the same wisdom thing, which pushes Stark into the right direction. Now another thing is that they did a product drop. When he gets rescued, he's walking around with a Burger King bag.
Yes. I do remember. I'm like, that was kind of like,
I don't remember seeing anything like that until like they do New York stuff. You can't get away with it because the signs are all over the place.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was like cheesy. I thought, I'm like, really, people? I mean, Burger King? I mean, okay, whatever.
But you know, I think they were the biggest fast food place at that time, so it makes sense.
Well, McDonald's is. Still was.
Now this is the first introduction of Agent Coulson.
Right.
And
Patrick likes this.
Yeah, and you know he this was sort of rewritten after they started seeing the dailies because of his chemistry with Pepper Potts and the cast. Mm-hmm. They went, ooh, there's something here. So now think about this. They rewrote it to make his part bigger. And at the time, he was only called Agent.
Right.
He didn't have a name.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no
name. And so they rewrote it to make his part bigger. If they hadn't done that, what would have happened down the road?
I don't know. I'm not a big Shield follower. I mean, I know Shield now through.
I love what they did with that.
Right.
In the movie.
Right. When I was introduced, I mean, I really didn't follow that much. I mean, like I said, I wasn't a big Iron Man person.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Shield
wasn't necessarily directly related with Iron Man.
Right. But I mean, I was ignorant of S.H.I.E.L.D. So yeah. when I saw Iron Man, that was like my beginning of, I mean, maybe I saw it in cartoons or some comics, but we're talking decades ago that I didn't focus on. So this is like a new introduction to me.
Yeah,
in 2008.
Well, let's go. Okay, Tony Stark was introduced. Yeah. Pepper Potts.
Fantastic, with Gwyneth Paltrow.
Happy Hogan.
Right.
Coulson, which was a character that wasn't in the comic books before, but we're only talking movies. So Agent Coulson, the Ironmonger, Ten Rings, Yinsen, he's dead.
Rhodes.
Yeah. Rhodes.
Rhodes.
That was all the major characters. They
Rhodey Rhodes,
Yes.
Rhodey
Rhodes, and so all that was already laid down within like the first 30 minutes. Boom, we have all.
Yeah, you get hit with a lot of stuff in this. I mean, this is one of
they laid it down
boom,
quick.
I mean, it starts and you're off to the races, which I liked because I was like, okay, let's see what this is going to be like. And I'm like, okay, this is like edge of your seat type of thing.
Oh, the dark code that Pepper uses to get into everything is 104, by the way.
Okay. Why, is that your password, Patrick?
Now we know how to get in Tony Stark's...
Right. Don't try it, people. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, although they get you started right in the action, they'll tell an origin story, which they haven't necessarily done in all the other...
No, they have not.
...Marvel films, except for possibly, like, Captain America and... Ant-Man are the only ones I can really think of.
That's the second Ant-Man.
Because, no, the first Ant-Man.
I know, but see.
Oh, but he's the second Ant-Man.
So they
for the most part, they've been introducing characters as though they're, you know, people who are
already established,
and maybe they're just introducing them into the films.
I think they got gun shy because they kept on redoing that with every iteration of Spider-Man. They'd retell
it
again. Every iteration of Batman, they'd retell it.
But it works for Iron Man because, again, like we said, Iron Man wasn't necessarily the most well-known character. Mm-hmm.
So you really need to know the backstory. At least I want to see it.
They had a blank slate, so they said, okay, we not only have to introduce this character to the people that don't know him, we have to introduce the world that he inhabits.
Yes, and I'm glad they did, like I said, because, I remember the sketches, you know, very sketchily, the story of Iron Man, and so I said, okay, so I'm glad they're setting it up, they're giving, you know, Pepper Potts, Rhodey, all that stuff. It literally felt like a.
And there wasn't a theme song. It opened up with.
What's the band
that they use that does the song "I'm Iron Man"?
Oh,
Black Sabbath. Yeah. I don't know why I blanked out.
But they also play in the opening scene where he's in the truck with the soldiers. They're playing AC/DC.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I say. AC/DC.
They opened up with that, but there isn't a theme song.
Right.
So it's another thing they didn't have. Oh, and they also made fun of MySpace.
Well, why not?
Yeah. Oh, and
it was it was 2008, so that with MySpace.
MySpace was still relevant.
I still have my MySpace.
Wonderful,
MySpace.
Patrick. Tell us all your profiles.
And my friend, if Friendster was still up, still have
okay,
that.
Okay, Patrick, we're losing people now, Patrick. Okay, off.
Oh, and
Robert Downey Jr.
Mm-hmm. Robert Downey.
People will pay attention.
And Jarvis.
Jarvis. Right. Okay, Paul Bettany. Which I thought was fantastic.
Oh, you know, and he did all his stuff in a couple of days because that was done.
Really?
They brought him in at the end because, you know, whenever he's reacting, he had somebody else read the lines to Robert Downey Jr. Okay. And then he went in there and did that.
What I read is that he did it all in one day.
Like all in one day.
A few hours.
Boom.
And really? Paul Bettany?
Yeah, but he didn't even know. really what the movie was. He just was, he had worked with Favreau before, mm-hmm. and so he knew it was a film that Favreau was working on.
Yeah, okay. Favreau wanted him really bad in this. So just think, if he didn't get his way, we wouldn't have Jarvis and we wouldn't have Vision.
Right.
If Coulson didn't have that chemistry, we wouldn't have him for the Avengers.
Or for the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So it's just... Yeah. So it just, you know, everything is dependent on this movie working and the chemistry on it. And then the Ironmonger is a character from the comic books.
Okay.
So they hit all the major plot lines from the comics. And they took decades and blended it into a two-hour movie.
And they also have the evolution of his armor happen in the film, too. So what you see in the very beginning when he puts together the suit in the cave, that's what his armor looked like in the early issues.
Yes.
This big hulking armor, and then
was the Mark One.
Right, and then they slim it down, and then he has like the one that's all
silver. And that's the Mark Two.
Then eventually he gets to the red and gold.
And then right after the silver one, which was looked very bulky in the comic books, and they made it look awesome in this, they went to an all gold one,
right,
which was the Mark III, which was
that wasn't in the movie though, was it?
Yes. No. Yes. Okay. It was a silver one,
a gold one.
Well, I remember the first one, which was super clunky. Like
then they had a silver one.
I do remember
sleek,
the silver, right.
And then a gold one that was sleek, and then he painted red on.
And the gold one had a nose. You know, in the early, late 60s, early 70s, they had it instead of just the regular
the face
plate. Yeah. And then the red and gold, which is the standard colors now that everybody associates with it. Right.
Yeah, the red and gold. I mean, it's red and gold. It's almost like a wine color.
Right. Now, the one that really drew, okay, we're getting off on there, but I'm just going to throw out Bob Layton, one of the greatest comic artist for Iron Man. Go look up his stuff. Now, okay, so he's the movie opens with him being attacked. They flash back to his beginnings. They kind of introduce it, how haphazard he is. That they say that he is basically a weapons designer.
They use a trick of sorts, a storytelling trick where they flash back 36 hours earlier, he's getting an award. So as part of the award presentation, they kind of give an overview of his life, of how he was this boy genius, his father was a great inventor.
Yes.
Part of the Manhattan Project.
Right, and so they kind of set up a little bit of the backstory for us.
Yeah, and so we understand where he's coming from, and then you show him gambling and drinking and then picking up, what's her name, Christina something from Vanity Fair.
Vanity Fair, right.
Yeah, and so... then Pepper Potts, you know, being very venomous against her the next day when she goes, she goes, well, so what do you do for him? She goes, well, I do everything he asked me to do, even taking out the trash.
Right. Yeah. She was in a happy camper right
zing!
There. Yeah.
And so they do all of this. They find out, you know, that, you know, the only reason why he has the arc reactor, he had to build it to keep his heart alive. And so that was the only reason. Now, if he had died or if that didn't work, you know, so that would have been the end of that.
But that's movie magic.
Yes. Right. Yes. Then I liked it when Pepper Potts had to reach into his chest and pull that out. That was pretty cool. And then they introduced the Ironmonger, and he basically destroys the large arc reactor that was apparently a failed experiment, but they bring it back when the Avengers mansion is built, skyscraper, because he knows it's
Stark Tower.
The Stark Tower. Stark Tower,
right.
But okay, we're getting ahead.
You know, nobody's mentioned, you know, kind of the baddie in this one is Jeff Bridges. You know,
the Ironmonger.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm calling him.
But no, actually, he's a puppet because I was the Ten Rings the villain?
Yes,
there,
right. Jeff Bridges, right.
Go to Jeff Bridges first. Is we want you to give us, you know, weapons, and he's like, ooh, I can make a lot of money off of this, and then he becomes their puppet? Or did Jeff Bridges go like, I want to control the company, so I want you to kill him so I can control it? So, you know, which was it? Was he, you know, who approached who?
I thought Jeff Bridges wanted to control the company. That was always my take. That was always my impression.
Yeah, so he was just going like, okay, I'm tired of this
He was the greedy Grizzle, the older executive. That's how I viewed it.
Because he had shepherded the company while Tony was young until Tony was able to take over the company. So he probably felt and some resentment that Tony was...
Right, because he knew Tony's father, right? So he knew the father, and he's like, okay, this is a playboy, he's wasting time, he's not really serious about the industry, and of course the whole defense angle, you know, with the wars going on. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Jeff Bridges, people know him from other movies. I mean, I've loved Jeff Bridges since the 1980s.
I wish that they hadn't killed Warmonger, because I really liked that character. I think they could have done so much more with it.
Yes. I mean, for a great actor like Jeff Bridges, I felt it was a kind of a stereotypical villain role.
There wasn't a lot to it, but at the same time, two dimensional.
But he played it to the hilt. That's why I liked it. So again, what we're saying earlier is how they took a gamble on Robert Downey Jr. But you had so many good actors and actresses: Gwyneth Paltrow, Robert Downey Jr., Jeff Bridges. You have Terrence Howard. I mean, you have very good actors with good resumes.
Do you think the chemistry between Terrence Howard and Robert Downey Jr. worked in this? Because Ethan brought up a good point, and when we get to the second one, well, we'll bring it up in this one, but we'll bring it up again in the next one. But
one of the main characters, meaning mainly Rhodes, was recast
in
this film.
Right.
So now I don't know if it was issues with the chemistry with Robert Downey, but I from what I recall reading, there were issues with him having
money.
Problems on the set, and then he wanted more money.
Too, yeah, so. He wanted a lot
Terrence
more
Howard,
money.
Terrence Howard wanted a bigger cut of the money. So
you can't blame him. You can't blame him. I mean, if he did, he could, probably never have Empire Biz. He'd be,
right.
He'd be rolling in his, Marvel Studios money.
And the two times I was on the set of Empire as an extra in season 4 and in 5.
What episode's Patrick? Right. What episode's Patrick?
Oh, that was 14 in season 4, and it was number 4 in season 5. Oh, and I forgot. It was also episode 14, because I not only do play a stage manager, but I also play a reporter.
Okay, all right. So you saw Terrence Howard arguing about money there too?
No. I'm just saying that my interaction with him, he was a really nice guy.
Okay, all right. Okay, so
okay,
all right.
That's
so
cool.
So maybe that was over 10 years ago.
Right.
Change.
Who knows?
People change.
And it may have just been all about the money.
Right. I mean,
we'll never really know, because it's all behind doors.
I thought Terrence Howard was a. I liked him. I thought he was good. I thought he was really good in the role. I thought it just, I don't know. I didn't see any issues with it. But
now,
that was me.
Now, they went through 4 suits of armor, Mark 1, 2, 3, and 4. And the last one he used with his old reactor. And he totaled this one, getting rid of the Ironmonger. Ironmonger also, the suit was more powerful, but primitive.
I would say it was more powerful, but it was not as advanced.
Because they were basing it off of
his first one
from the first one that he built in the cave. So
which it was kind of like the way I remember the final battle was like a might versus right type of thing.
Brains over brawn.
Right.
Yeah, that's how.
Now, one quick thing about Terrence Howard and his character Rhodey Rhodes.
Yes.
There is a scene when he's in Tony's shop, and the silver armor is standing there.
Yes.
And he looks at it, and he says, maybe next time. So that was kind of a tease to him eventually becoming War Machine.
Right? Yes.
Right.
And then one thing about Ironmonger as a villain, I also read that Favreau's original plan was he was going to introduce the Mandarin in this film.
Yes.
And then decided to push off the Mandarin to the third film.
Yeah, there was like too many villains, because they did introduce the Ten Rings, which was part of the Mandarin group.
Right, and I think they were probably like, well, we don't know if we'll make another one, so we're going to toss everything into this one to get people
see what sticks to the wall.
Right, which can be dangerous. I thought the movie had plenty of moving parts. Anything else?
There was a lot more that they went, we're just not going to put it in here.
Which was smart.
Because if War Machine was in there, it was too many armors.
It was great for them to tease it.
Yeah.
Right. Because again, if it makes money, then
Yeah, then they can do something with it. And then they have more of a footing to do what they want.
And then that was one of those things that was like an Easter egg for the comic fans, because people who follow the comics knew that Rhodey became War Machine. But
correct.
For just someone like Larry who wasn't familiar with the character, it might just be like, oh,
okay.
That would be as well. Yeah. Right. It wasn't that big of a deal.
And I like the running gag. It's just like, you know, every time that Agent Coulson came along, he would give the acronym to S.H.I.E.L.D., and everybody kept on saying, that's a mouthful. And he goes, yeah, we're working on it. And then he goes, he finally at the end, he goes, I'm from S.H.I.E.L.D. And everybody went, okay. So it's just, you know, that was the first time that they said that, you know, emphasized S.H.I.E.L.D. So now, taking this away and now not knowing, they didn't know where they're going to be in 10 years.
Right.
With Captain Marvel coming out, and keep in mind, people, that is coming out next year, but in the timeline that takes place almost 10 years before Iron Man.
Right. And it's a 1990s period movie.
So yeah. More than 10 years, probably.
Early 90s.
It's supposed to be, 15. I think, early to mid 90s, I think.
Yes. Yeah. So therefore. Was S.H.I.E.L.D. being developed then? Because, you know,
We'll find out when we see the movie, it'll be a skeleton crew of anything. It's like an origin story of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, that was actually with Agent Carter, because
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agent Carter
goes back to post-war.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. That's right.
Yeah. But yes. Okay, so now they introduced the sexual tension between Pepper Potts and Tony Stark, because they almost kiss. And so they've laid that groundwork. They've laid down the groundwork that he's changing the company.
Right.
They've laid the groundwork that Rhodey knows that he's Iron Man. And then at the end, they do something that goes against the grain of the comic book.
When he said the final line of the movie, I am Iron Man.
Right.
And blammo.
Right, it just the credits.
Yes. And
which I was shocked by. I didn't think that was that
traditionally happen. In the comics, the biggest most important thing for the superhero to do is to preserve their secret identity.
Right.
Which protects everybody else around them. So that's the only reason why a superhero has a secret identity, because they have friends and family, so they have to keep that to protect them.
Right.
And what does he do? He goes, yeah.
But see, that's kind of why it works with Robert Downey.
That's part of what makes it work, yes.
Right, absolutely. Because it was such an... It was a superhero movie. It had, you know, the tough older guy, you know, with the hero and all that. But yeah, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. kind of took a lot of liberties with the, you know, standard Batman type story or Superman or what have we seen, and literally turned him upside down, which has made it a very exciting movie.
Because, you know, he's somebody that has no superpowers. He's self-created.
Correct.
He is a multi-millionaire.
Billionaire, right.
And he's got a love interest that he's interacting with. He's got a best friend. So all the tropes of the superhero genre. Then they went, let's throw all that out.
We're going to admit to it and see where it lies.
Does anybody know that was an ad-libbed line?
No.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. They had all this stuff done, and then Robert Downey Jr. was, can I do another take on this? And the director went, you know, sure, let's see what happens.
So they weren't supposed to admit to it, you're saying?
No.
Ah.
So they did that, and they went, what can we do with this? And then that was the take they used in the movie.
Yeah,
I think that was a smart move.
Okay, now I, being a fan from the very beginning, my comic book collection of Iron Man starts with issue number 2. I'll probably never afford number 1. But at the same time, when Iron Man, the Invincible Iron Man came out, they also had a one-issue standalone. It was Iron Man and the Submariner. And that was a standalone one-issue shot they did that came out the same month as issue 2. But I've been following Iron Man from the very, very beginning. So I was excited about this. I loved what they did with it. I saw it in the theater opening weekend. This is before I started my rule saying I have to see it all movies on opening night. But I saw it that weekend. I went nuts. I just completely was blown away with it. I say that if anybody gets a chance, this is something that you should buy on DVD so you can see the extras and the behind the scenes stuff. Mine is a DVD buy. What about you two?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of the beginning. It's truly the beginning of the Marvel Universe. Yeah. It's kind of the
foundation,
the core. It's the kickoff.
Can we just real quick talk about the after credit sequence?
Yes. Now there was an after credit sequence.
Establishes the pattern of Marvel films having an after credit sequence.
What happens? Who wants to go over it?
Ethan.
So Tony is entering his home,
and you hear the alarm going off, and Jarvis is off.
Jarvis is saying something
garbled,
and you see the back of a person standing in his living room, and
a silhouette,
and it's Samuel L. Jackson. He said right. He introduces himself as Nick Fury, director of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then he tells him that he says that you think that you're special.
I am Iron Man. You're special.
You think you're special? There's others out there. You're not alone in this universe. And then he says he wants to talk to him about the Avengers Initiative.
And right. Blammo.
That's the end of the film.
So that starts the trend that basically everybody's expecting now with all films. Not even Marvel now.
If there isn't something...
In the middle of the credits, or after the movie, or after the final credits in a film, you feel cheated nowadays.
Right. Well. Granted, I mean, not to take away from Marvel, but like with Pixar movies, like the Toy Story movies, like they'd have like little snippets in the credits, yes. Right? Like little out. I mean, they weren't real outtakes, but they're right. Little.
They did that
little
with Bug's Life too.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. So I mean, but you're talking about like something significant, something that significant.
You don't want to miss. You got to stay to make
to the
sure.
Right, right, right. End. The right. Last frame of film is out of the projector.
Right.
Then you're allowed to.
Because you don't miss it. Because then you're missing something that you need to know.
But again, that gets back to what we were saying earlier about how they, even though this was the first film, they didn't know if it was going to be successful. They would have lost their shirt had it not been successful. Mm-hmm. They still were planting the seeds of that. They obviously were planning to build up to mm-hmm. the Avengers eventually.
Yeah, but where this was going to go, if this was successful, even if it was mildly successful, let's say that it didn't do as well as it did, then that would have restricted them. So what could they have done with it? They did something marvelous with what the tools they had, and it just yes. The Avengers were introduced. Nick Fury was introduced. Agent Coulson was introduced. So the door has been opened to a wider universe.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. Right. And then, so.
No other superheroes, though. It was just him.
It was correct. That's yeah. Correct. That's correct. Yes.
They implied a lot.
But they implied, again, the dialogue from Fury is that, you're not alone.
No.
There's others out there.
Which is kind of nice that because then they kind of hints at the chronological order that he's dealing with Captain Marvel,
right.
Blah, blah,
so
blah.
That,
blah.
Right. He's known about
about
superheroes or people with superpowers for
Captain
for years.
America, obviously.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
So boom. So that ends that. The foundation has been built.
Yeah.
Now,
right. can I just interject
yes.
Since we're
yes.
talking, this is the beginning of the Marvel Universe, I just want to just comment on, I know we talked briefly offline last time we were together that, the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been hands down the most successful franchise in film history. I mean, we're talking about now 20 films in 10 years. Every single one has not just made money, they've been extremely profitable, making hundreds of millions.
Box office successes, right.
They're always in the top box office of every
strong
year.
Strong story, strong
yes.
characters.
Well written.
Well received.
Right.
And tied
great
together
acting.
Extremely well.
Right. So it's that in itself is very important to point out. The other thing that I personally look at is, someone who grew up reading comics and what have you, is that the fact that these films have been so successful, I think, has had a lot to do with comic culture, geek culture becoming more mainstream. I think, if you think
that
about...
This opens the door
this
for us.
This opens the door. And I mean, I think of people I know who, have probably never picked up a comic book in their life, yet they go to see every single Marvel film when it comes out. They go see it opening night or opening weekend. They can't wait to see it. People know who, you know, Ant-Man is. People know who, you know, Nick Fury is. These are characters who are not well-known characters that weren't on the level of a Superman or a Batman or a Spider-Man just 10 years ago. And yet people know who these characters are. People know who Guardians of the Galaxy is. Guardians of the Galaxy was not even a hit comic, and then that's become a huge hit. So
yeah, that was the next big gamble of Marvel.
Right, but it to me, that really is a testament to how what a good job that Marvel has done in exposing not only making the film successful, but exposing this whole universe and this whole world to the broader audience.
Right, and you know? Right, and I think, and again, not to underscore this too much or put a stamp on it, but you know, Iron Man, secondary, tertiary superhero, not super well known or well, you know, famous, so to speak. And so if I'm Marvel, I think it's genius. Say, well, let's take a person who's been a star in the past. So we, and he has a little issue. And, you know, they put, again, you have Jeff Bridges, who's been a star for at least 25 years, you know, in Hollywood. Gwyneth Paltrow was
30.
Okay, well, there you go. So, I mean, these are very famous actors that say, well, I guess they could screw it up, but they really wouldn't screw up. It just be if it was a bad plot or a bad screenplay.
Well, I feel like every single one of them took their character and just chewed it up.
Right,
they,
absolutely.
They did what they filled it out.
Right,
and
so
that wouldn't have worked if they hadn't done that.
No, and so what we're saying is how they give an origin story of Iron Man. Really, Iron Man movie of 2008 is the origin story of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Without that movie doing well, and I truly believe without Downey Jr., without Jeff Bridges, Paltrow, you know, Terrence Howard, all these, I would consider A-list actors, it wouldn't be where it is now.
The chemistry of the actors, the writing, the directing,
the cinematography. Favreau's a fantastic, director.
The everything worked. Every single component worked.
Right.
And that, or we wouldn't be here today. Or we wouldn't be having this podcast without.
Right, exactly. Right. Yes. I mean, there are other DC movies. You know, Superman was coming back. You know, then the Batman series was ready in full.
Well, because of this movie, a major comic book titles and characters were just being bought right and left.
Exactly.
There's hundreds of characters out there that studios are sitting on or trading, like trading cards, because, you know, everybody wants their Marvel.
The next thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Everybody wants to, instead of trying to learn from this, everybody's trying to capture lightning in a bottle.
Right.
I mean, that's what DC has tried to do with their film franchises. Yeah. I mean, we had
to do one on DC alone.
There was Superman movies, sure, there were Batman movies, but the whole attempt to, you know, bring together the Justice League, you know, that's a direct response to the success of the Avengers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question about it. Right.
Yeah. Look at Valiant as a comic book company came back because of the success of Marvel. And that whole entire universe has been sold. They're coming out with their own, you know, the book. The first one they're coming out with is Bloodshot. Pui, my mouth. Starring
Vin Diesel?
Yeah.
August?
I think that's been moved. Next year, there's going to be more superhero movies hitting the screen, the small and large, than we've ever seen before. We're going to be inundated again.
Right. So a la Solo, as we discussed in previous...
Somebody's going to get hurt.
Right. Again, I mean, how many can you take? Because, I mean, you're going to have, what, Captain Marvel in March? Am I right? March of 2019?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
At least in North America. Mm-hmm. And then end of April is... Avengers Endgame,
and then summer is Spider-Man Far From Home.
And Bloodshot,
right.
And then we have,
Aquaman's coming in December this month,
Woman sequel is coming.
Right. Mm-hmm. These are
the ones that they've announced, but right. I do know that there's several Image movies on the works. Right. I think Wildcats.
We're just talking movies. I mean, think of all the stuff on Netflix, all the stuff that you can watch on TV streaming. Exactly.
Yeah, but you know, here we're just going to focus on Iron Man.
And just one real quick thing.
Yes.
kind of tying back to what I said about comics becoming more mainstream.
Yeah.
To me, that a great example of that is last month, you know, we unfortunately had the passing of Stan Lee.
Yes.
And, I mean, would you have thought 20, 30 years ago that Stan Lee's passing would be headline news on, mm-hmm. you know, that you'd see it mentioned on the
CNN. It was on CNN. It was on everybody. Everybody
common
cares.
Person knows it.
Everybody knows who Stan Lee is. People who have never read a comic book knows who Stan Lee is.
Right.
Partly because he makes a cameo in every in every movie, but everybody knows that Stan Lee's the guy who created Marvel and created all these characters.
Right. If you would have asked me in 2008, I knew who Stan Lee was.
But you wouldn't have associated with him. Right?
No, well, I mean, I wouldn't know. I think I would have. But I wouldn't know what he looked like. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, but he's made these cameos.
Man or woman on the street wouldn't have known who
he was. No, they'd be like, who's that?
Or the coverage that Comic-Con gets now or stuff like that. It's just, it's taken a whole nother
turn. Yeah, it's gone from being elitist, geeky stuff to being...
It still is geeky, but now it's become so much more.
But geeky has become mainstream.
It's no longer Zuckerberg, geeky, Facebook. It's mainstream. So it's just it's so sad. But anyway, I wanna be elitist again.
You are, Patrick.
Share just with the masses. That's my philosophy.
I'm too selfish. Anyway, okay. So basically we all three of us coming from three different points of view. Experiencing this all basically the same way. We all enjoyed it, and we all got sucked into this universe.
Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely. Without a question.
And we're all saying, like, get it in DVD. Don't stream it. Go out and buy it because of the extras and all the behind-the-scenes stuff. So let's wrap this one up, and next week we're going to do the next one that comes out. Now, here's the thing, is that this one isn't part of the Marvel Universe, but it is. Now, this one was released by Universal.
But and it's still in conjunction with Marvel Studios?
Yes, it is. Yes. And that's going to be The Incredible Hulk.
Yes.
But anyway, so I want everybody to remember that you could reach us at geekculture.online. You can reach us at our Facebook page at Greek Culture Online, our Instagram at Greek Culture Online.
Geek Culture.
Geek.
Back
in Athens. I'm just looking at the analytics today, and we have people from overseas that are just...
Including we apparently have some Greek fans. So,
we do have some great. Greek fans.
Hello to those of you in Greece listening.
Yes, thank you so much.
And everywhere else around the world.
Yes. You can reach us on our Twitter at
Your Geek Culture. My favorite.
Yes, and you can write to me directly at patrick@geekculture.online. You could write to Larry at Larry@geekcultureonline. You could write to Ethan at Ethan@geekcultureonline. And I'm Patrick.
I'm Larry.
I'm Ethan.
Have a good one.